Anthony walks over to him and snatched it and said, give me that ball. And we were like, he is such, because they were premature, so they were little. And he ain't but an inch high trying to bully somebody. And that was the last time I heard him talk. And a couple of weeks after that, they went and got their MMR vaccinations. And I have not heard my child speak since.
Welcome back to the Goldilocks podcast, where we are unlabeled and constantly finding just right. Today, I'm so excited to introduce Andrea. She has twin sons with autism. They're 18 years old. She got a testimony. She got a great story for us, and I'm so excited for you to hear it. Please sit back and relax and listen to the Goldilocks podcast. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Goldilocks podcast, where we are unlabeled. Our goal is to spotlight the resources, stories, and inspiration of our underserved communities. No matter what your situation, lifestyle, or circumstance, we'll be right by your side, finding just right. This is the Goldilocks podcast. Today, I have the esteemed pleasure to introduce Andrea, a mother of twin boys of autism. Her twin boys are now 18-year-old adults, and she has blessed us with her presence to speak on her journey and all the advice she has for our goalies embarking on their own. Welcome, Andrea, to the podcast today.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for being a part of this. Andrea is part of a growing network of powerful women that I have beginning to learn about through not only the Lasper, but it'll come to me, but it's a network of people who we've interviewed, and we've started to grow and grow through each other and forming a nice little family. So I really appreciate not only your presence, but how you got here, which just shows the power of these stories and how much they mean to each other. So, you know, I want to thank you for joining us today. So
No problem.
So first and foremost, I want you to just kind of introduce yourself to our audience and let us know who you are and what you're about.
Hello, everybody. My name is, as Mr. Ambrose has said, my name is Andrea Reed. I am a proud mom of twin boys who were both diagnosed with autism at the age of 3. At the time my boys were diagnosed with autism, I had absolutely no knowledge whatsoever of what autism was. I've never heard of it, had no clue what to do with it, how it was going to affect our lives, but I shortly learned. My boys were diagnosed exactly 1 week apart from each other. I was thrown pamphlets, articles, doctors were telling me this, telling me that, trying to help me understand what this autism was and what it meant for myself, my family, and it didn't help. I have one that's severely autistic and one that's mildly autistic, if you can say that. So the severe autistic child is nonverbal. Till recently, he was non-potty trained, and they told me that he would need assistance straight through adulthood. The other one, he's verbal. You know, he's goes to the bathroom on his own. He's made the honor roll in school since eighth grade. And he just, if you want to call it graduation, he just graduated from high school in June. But, you know, the pandemic being current right now, they did the virtual graduation. It sucked, but he graduated. He got a high school diploma in May. They graduated in May. It has been a journey. I could call it a journey. We've been through some ups and some downs. We've been through some hard times, but we've stuck together and we've made it work. My boys are now 18 years old. And when I tell you we have been through, we have been through. My severely autistic son, like I said, he's nonverbal. He wasn't potty trained. I tell everybody, 2016, up until the beginning of 2020, my son has been placed in and out of psychiatric hospitals. He's had the police called on him. He's been thrown in 4-point restraints. He's been medicated with prescriptions on top of prescriptions on top of prescriptions. I mean, we have been through it all. I have watched my son be manhandled by 7 different security guards all at one time. I've watched the nurses inject all these different medications into his system. I've watched him take people, grown men, and pick them up over his head and slam them to the ground. I mean, I've seen it all. I've seen it all. I've seen my son be over-medicated and not be able to be awakened. I mean, I've been through it all. I have developed heart palpitations. My blood pressure has gone up. I tend to break out in hives, just trying to handle and deal with everything that's going on with my boys. The one son, doctors told me there was no surgeries, there was no medication, there was nothing that could help me with the autism, just interventions. And I immediately, when they were 3 years old, I jumped into speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, behavior therapy. I did it all. I did it all, thinking that I was going to cure my boys from autism. But as they got older, it got worse. At the same time, if I can back up a little bit, my boys were diagnosed in March of 2005, and I got divorce papers in May of 2005. Mm-hmm. So I had this thing called autism that I was dealing with and a divorce that I was dealing with, which led me to raise my boys by myself. Had no clue what to do, how to do, but I did it. I stuck in there. I hung in there. The sleepless nights, the tears I've cried, the frustration, the anger, the wanting to give up, to just walk away from it all. I hung in there, and my boys are now 18 years old. 18 years I have gone through. Before I had them diagnosed, they were born early. They were premature. My brother, my youngest brother, I have 3 brothers. My youngest brother came to my house and he said to me, "Something is wrong with the twins." And I actually got upset with my brother because I'm like, "How are you gonna tell me something wrong with my babies? There's nothing wrong with them." And he goes, "They're not like the average children in our family. Something is wrong with the boys." You know, most kids at, 18, 19 months, they're like, "Die, die, die," or they'll wave, you know, backwards, "Bye, bye," whatever. My boys didn't do that. And I thought it was because they were premature. And that's what I told my brother. I said, "Give them a chance. They're not really that age. They were premature. They got to catch up to their age." Mm-hmm. And he knew, he could tell that I was not receptive to what he was saying to me. So he went and talked to our mom. And my mom called me and said, "Just do it to satisfy us, satisfy the family. Go have the boys evaluated." So I did, out of protest. I went and I had my boys evaluated because I'm going to prove to my family there's nothing wrong with my boys. My boys are fine. So I went to the pediatrician. They made an appointment for me to take the boys in. And little to my belief, they were both diagnosed with autism. The first son, they told me that he would be okay with the right interventions. He would be able to thrive in life. When I left that appointment, I cried because they told me there was something wrong with my son's brain. That autism meant there was a defect in my child's brain. And all I kept hearing was my son had a brain defect. My son was not going to live. So I cried when I left that appointment because I'm like, "Oh my God, something's wrong with my child's brain." So the following week, I took the second son in and they told me that he was severe, that he was going to need assistance throughout the rest of his life, straight through adulthood. And this time when I left that appointment, I was crying so hard, I had to stop because I couldn't even see myself walking. Couldn't even see to walk. The tears had just filled my eyes and I could not see my path to walk to my car. I was just crying so hard, like, "Oh my God, both of my boys, something's wrong with both of my boys' brain." This is what I kept telling myself. How in the world do you fix a brain defect? But they told me there was no surgeries. There was no medications. There was nothing but these interventions. So I was determined I was going to cure my children. I was going to fix them. I dived into research. I started reading articles. I talked to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a nutritionist. I talked to special need teachers. I talked to everybody trying to figure out how I can cure my boys from autism. Little did I know autism was going to come in and turn our lives upside down. And when I say it turned our lives upside down, it turned my life upside down. I've been through it all. I mean, people don't want me to come to their house because I got this 13-year-old boy that has accidents and he urinates on their sofas. He urinates on their kitchen table chairs. He urinates in people's cars. So nobody wants me around because I have a teenager who's wetting, you know, urinating on everybody's furniture. I got to the point where I started carrying cleaning products with me because I knew, even with the protection up under him, he would urinate right through it because he's a teenager. His bladder is bigger than an infant's bladder. Mm-hmm. When he released his bladder, I mean, he released some urine, and people didn't want me over their houses. So I started feeling alienated, secluded. Nobody wanted me around except for my family, my brothers and my mom and my dad. They were the only ones that accepted us. They understood, you know, my son has got this condition where he may have an accident on your furniture. Nobody else wanted me around. I mean, I even went to church and my son urinated on the pews in church and I was so embarrassed. I was just so embarrassed. And we church hopped because we couldn't find a church that accepted us until I ran into the church that I'm a member of right now. And my pastor actually got up in the pulpit and he told the members he better not hear of anyone rejecting us. Because that's a church of love. He's told them, we're a church of love. We have to accept this young lady. She is doing the best that she can with these boys. And I love them. I've been at that church for 10 years now. And everybody has received us with arms open wide. I'm telling you, it's like the best feeling ever. But just recently, like I said, from 2016 up until currently, December 2018, my son that's nonverbal and not potty trained had this massive meltdown. I was at work and we have this grant called the Autism Waiver. They provide services for my boys. Also, they provide people to come to my house. They're like CNAs that will come to my house and help me with my boys because I can't go to work. Unless I have somebody to help me with my boys.
Yeah.
So these CNAs would come into my house and they would help bathe my children. They would help feed my boys, the whole nine, help me take care of my boys. One day, December, the boys were out of school for Christmas break, for the winter break. The CNA came to my house and she told me she had experience dealing with irate autistic children and she would be good. I went to work, so a little bit after 1 o'clock, it was my lunchtime. My phone rang and I went to answer it and the phone call dropped. Excuse me, I got a text message. Anthony is out of control. My son's name is Anthony. He is out of control. So I tried to call her back and I got no answer. I called a second time, still no answer. I called a third time. So at the third call, I'm starting to get worried. So my other son, we communicate via Facebook, FaceTime on his iPad. So I said, my other son is Andre. I'm going to call Andre. Andre always answers his phone, always. So I called his iPad via FaceTime, no answer. So I'm bugging out at this point in time. I'm like, oh my God, I get this text message that my son is out of control. I get a phone call that dropped before I answered it. So I tried calling her one more time and still no answer. And I went to my supervisor and I'm like, I got to go. Thank goodness everybody at my job knows my situation with my boys. She was like, just go take care of home. When I got home, I pulled up, there was a EMT vehicle and four police cars. And I'm like, OMG, what is going on? I pull up, I park, and the young lady is outside with my other son, Andre. She has no top on, and this is December, it's cold. And she looked like she had been in a fight with a tiger. I kid you not. There were at least 10 scratches down her face, and they were actively bleeding. She had a plug that he had bit her in her wrist. And I mean, you could see his teeth prints, and her arm was swollen and bleeding, actively bleeding. Her hair was sticking to the top of her head. And I'm like, what the heck? My child did this to you? She said he pounced on her like a wild bear, and she couldn't get away from him. He injured that poor child. She said the only way she got away from him is he grabbed her shirt and ripped it. And she fell from the ripped shirt to the ground and rolled away from him. And she grabbed my other son and took off. When I got inside, the furniture was turned over upside down. I have flowers, home plants. I bought these beautiful ceramic pots to put my plants in, all broken up into 1,000 pieces, dirt all over the place. My glass tables turned over and broke in half. I mean, the dining room table chairs turned over. It looked like a tornado had hit my home. And I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't go in. The police came over to me and they said, can you tell us what happened? I said, I just got here. That's the CNA that was in there taking care of my son. I can't tell you no more than what she told me. So they went over and got a statement from her, and then they told her to go see the EMT and get help because she was bleeding. The police officer came back over to me, and I'm assuming he's like the lieutenant or the supervisor, because there was 4 police cars. As we are talking, a 5th police car pulls up. After they talked to her, I guess he called for even more help. So the EMT guy comes over to me and he says, I have an autistic son that has these meltdowns. Let me see if I can go in and talk to him. I swear to you not. He was in there maybe 60 seconds and he came back out. He said, oh no, the police got to go in there and take care of that. And I'm like, what the heck? So the police officer, I guess the supervisor, lieutenant, he says, okay, we're going in. We're going to bring your son out. If he comes at us in a threatening manner, we can't promise you that we won't pull our weapons. I was like, what? You what? No, you don't have to pull your weapons. Now, I know my son, if you come at him and he feels that you are a threat, he's coming at you. So I'm like, oh my God. All I did was fall down to my knees because I know my son. I know he's going to charge after these police officers. And all I keep thinking is how all these young Black men are losing their lives at the hands of the police. Oh. And I'm thinking, my child is going to come after you. He's going to come after you. And I'm like, please let me go in. Let me go in. And they wouldn't let me go in. They said they wanted to go in because of the injuries that the CNA had endured. And then the EMT guy running back out saying, no, we need the police to go in there. They went in there, 8 police officers strong, okay, to go bring my son out. But thank God, I don't know what happened. They brought him out in shackles, hands and his ankles. And they had him, you know, one hand, one foot, and they were carrying him out. To put him in the police squad. They didn't want to put him in the ambulance because they said the rage that he was in, he may break loose and do harm to the EMT workers. So they put him in the back of the police car. When they brought him down the front steps, when he saw me, he went into another rage. And I'm like, Anthony, just cooperate. Just stop. Just cooperate. They put him in the police car and they told me to follow them to the hospital. He was in the hospital from December to June.
Wow.
December to June. 6 months. No. Yeah, December to June, because he turned 18 in May. And I did a Zoom party for them because the pandemic happened. I did a Zoom party for them and the hospital agreed to Zoom in to the Zoom call so that everybody could say happy birthday to him. And social workers, the doctors, everybody was talking to me. And they told me that this had been his 10th hospital admission since 2016. So from 2016 to 2020, I had he had been hospitalized in a psychiatric hospital 10 times.
Yikes.
10 times. He's been in the ICU. He's had emergency surgery because of all the medication they were given, injecting into him. He developed an abscess. It burst. The bacteria was running through his bloodstream, so they had to take him into emergency surgery. He comes out of that. He had 15 stitches. He busts every single stitch in his arm bleeding all over the place. There's blood here, blood there. Take him back to the hospital. He has another massive meltdown. They put him back in the psychiatric hospital yet again. But this December 2019 up to June 2020, the social workers and the doctors were talking to me, and I had to make a decision. Do I let him come home and hurt somebody else? Or do I put him in a group home? And after thinking about it, talking to my mom and my dad, my pastor, and praying over it, I went ahead and I signed the paperwork to put him into a group home. One of the hardest things I ever had to do. I felt like I had turned my back on my child. But for everybody's safety, including his own, I knew that was the best decision to make. But it was a hard decision to make. I've never been separated from my son since, I mean, ever. I've always been allowed to go to the hospitals. I'm a nurse, and I work 12-hour shifts. And one hospitalization, he stopped eating. He wasn't drinking anything. And they were like, can you come to the hospital to see if you can get him to eat and drink? I have to be to work at 7. So I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, go to the hospital, feed my son breakfast, go to work from 7 a.m. to 7:30 p.m., come home and take care of my other autistic son, and then go to the hospital and feed my son dinner, then come home and get some sleep, and then get up and go do it all over again the next morning. Cool. I did that for like 2 months. And then he finally started eating without me coming to the hospital. I'm telling you, when I say I've been through it all, I've been through it all. I got a phone call probably like 6 weeks now from the director of the group home that my son is in. And she goes, Mom, is it possible for you to bring us some underwear for Anthony? And I'm like, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, sure. I said, I get adult diapers delivered from a medical supply company. And I said, well, when they deliver the diapers, I'll bring the underwear. And she goes, oh, no, we don't need any more diapers. Anthony is potty trained. I'm like, shut the front door. Stop. And I'm like, okay, so he's still gonna need diapers for overnight, right? Because, you know, he has accidents overnight. She goes, oh no. Anthony gets up in the middle of the night, goes to the bathroom. He wakes up completely dry. He has been going to the bathroom on his own. No prompting, no, you know, gestures or anything. He gets up and goes on his own. He's been doing that for a month. He has been staying completely dry. There's no need for any more diapers. I'm like, that is like the best news ever. I've gone from newborn diapers to pull-ups to adult diapers. My son is 18 years old and he is finally potty trained. I'm like, wow. And people look at me like, she's excited about an 18-year-old being potty. He should have been potty trained.
Damn right. Like,
boy, if you knew my journey, you'd understand my joy right now.
Oh, I understand. 18
years of buying. Now, my insurance company covers a certain amount of diapers. But he, as he gets older, he's using more diapers. So that's money out of my pocket that I have to spend that the insurance company won't cover with these adult diapers. With underwear, we just throw them in the wash machine, put some laundry detergent in there, put them in the dryer, we good to go. We ain't got to spend money, $60, $70 a month to keep my son dry. That was like the best news ever. So I told the director, I said, okay, the next time you call me, I'm claiming it. You're going to tell me my son talking. I'm just claiming it. I'm like, I need some good news. I need some good news. And that was like the best news ever. My mom called me the other day and she goes, what are you doing? I'm like, Mom, I am sitting on the sofa with a cup of hot tea with my feet propped up, chilling. I have waited 18 years to say that. That has not happened for me in almost 18 years. I have not been on vacation since 2006. I divorced my ex-husband in 2005. My girlfriends took me out on vacation. We went to Miami to the Black Film Festival thing that they have in Miami. That's the last time I've been on vacation because I have given everything that I am to my boys. I'm trying to be a mom that supports them, that has their back, that makes sure that they are living a productive life as much as they possibly can. So I have dedicated everything that I am to my boys. And people have told me, you are such a strong woman. You are such a strong woman. The pediatrician, my boy's pediatrician said, if I knew how to nominate you as Mother of the Year, she said, I would, because you are phenomenal. And I'm like, I don't see it. I'm just being a mom. I love my boys. I'm their mom. Until that incident, when I told you when the police went in, and I had to do an echocardiogram because my heart started beating all out of whack. My blood pressure shot up. I was like 158 over 95. I broke out in hives every single night for like a month straight. I was about to OD on Benadryl. I just couldn't sleep. I wasn't eating. I just was all out of whack. My system was all out of whack. And when I went and did all the testing, my doctor told me I was an extremely healthy person. She said, I wish all my patients that are your age was as healthy as you are. My heart is fine. I don't have hypertension. You know, she said, it's the level of stress that you are dealing with that's got your body all out of whack. Well, since I put my son in this group home and I've come to peace with it, my blood pressure has come down. My heart is beating normally now. I don't break out in hives anymore, and I'm sleeping like a baby. it was a hard decision, but it was a good decision. I was able to get kind of somewhat my life back. I wrote a book. My book is titled One Tear at a Time, and it actually tells my journey. From the time I found out I was pregnant with the twins up until I think eight or 9 years of age, it's been a minute since I read it. I display step by step, tier by tier, what it meant for me to raise autistic twin boys by myself, completely single by myself. And people always ask me, well, what happened to their dad? Why doesn't their dad help you? He chose not to be a part of their lives. I've always left the door open for him to come back and help me. I pleaded for his help, but he chose to not be a part of their lives. He told me that was my punishment for divorcing him. He was going to allow me to raise them alone. And I'm like, okay, if that makes sense for you, okay, I guess. So I have raised them completely, totally, 100% by myself. I've gone through all of these obstacles by myself. And the other one that's, highly more functioning than the severe one, I've had some situations with him too. I'm a female raising boys to be men. Like I said, he's potty trained. He goes to the bathroom on his own, but he, as people say, he uses the bathroom like a female. He sits down. He went on a field trip at school, and they called me and they told me that they were doing a bathroom break, and the teacher had her foot in the door. It was a female teacher. She had her foot in the men's bathroom door at this public restroom. And this guy comes out of the bathroom and he says, you have a student standing at the urinal with his pants and underwear all the way down around his ankles. He is a target. And I'm like, okay. So she says she ran into the bathroom, and when they got back to school, they taught my son to use the stalls because you can close the door and lock it. If you're gonna keep pulling your underwear all the way down around your ankles, you need to be where you're in a private place, where there's a door that you can close and lock it. That's how he uses the bathroom. So one day, 2018, I get a phone call from the principal and the school police. And I'm like, okay. Now, mind you, my other son is in the hospital, in a psychiatric hospital, just got admitted to a psychiatric hospital the end of September. And this was towards the middle of October. I get a phone call from the school principal and the school police. My son was sexually violated in the boys' bathroom.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what? They thought it was funny, you know, that he's standing at the urinal because he went into the bathroom and the stalls were full. He had to go. So he used the urinal. He's at the urinal with his pants and underwear down around his ankles. And these two boys thought it was a great prank to sexually violate my son in the boys' bathroom. And I'm like, so how do you guys know what happened? These idiots videotaped it.
Oh.
I went through that. I started breaking out in hives. My blood pressure went up. Because everybody were minors, they never told me these kids' names. All they told me is they weren't special needs and that they were being punished. Because they videotaped it and my son's naked body was on this videotape, the district attorney considered it child pornography. And then I got a call and said that this video hit social media. I mean, when I tell you my life has been turned upside down, I'm like, everybody loves my son at this school. Who the heck did this to my child? But because they're minors, they could not disclose their information, their age, their names, where they lived, who their parents are, their race. I kind of got a
kind of idea. Yeah.
They claimed they were punished or whatever have you. But they promised me my son would be watched, protected, taken care of. And he was right up until he graduated from high school. They wouldn't tell me if these boys were expelled from the school. Were they still in the same school with my son? They wouldn't tell me anything. I'm telling you, I have been through, everybody keeps telling me, oh, it's time for a part two book. 'Cause I've been through so much in the past, 6-7 years, I have been through so much. And my book stops, my current book stops. I think, like I said, age 8, age 9. And a whole lot has happened since my boys have been 9 years of age. I'm in the process of trying to find some normalcy to my life. But I said, I am going to get on it. I am going to write part two. I just feel like, my God, my son is potty trained. Oh, I can write a whole bunch about that, about him not being potty trained and then getting the phone call saying he's now potty trained. No more diapers. Wow. That's huge for me. It may seem small to somebody else, but to me, that is huge. That's more than $1 million. And people probably say, you crazy. I'd take $1 million any day. Let me tell you, walk a day in my shoes and you'd understand why I say, telling me that my son is potty trained, it's more than $1 million. I've bought so many mattresses and box springs. I've cleaned so many car seats and sofas and dining room table chairs and kitchen table chairs. I've wiped up and mopped up urine and I've wiped up and scraped up poop. I'm like, you just don't know. Just don't know. The one that's highly functioning went outside. He's a track star. He's 6'2". He's really tall and he loves to run. So they put him on the track team at school and he does really, really, really well. Well, he went outside to play and some of the kids in the neighborhood, I said they were being mean. And when I said it at an IEP meeting, they said that's bullying. They were calling him stupid, dumb, retarded, all kind of mean names. And I heard these kids and I told myself, okay, before you go outside, take a deep breath, because you don't want to go outside and hurt somebody's kids.
Right.
So I did. I took a deep breath and I went outside and I told these kids, my child has autism. And I asked them, do you guys know what autism is? And they said, no, no. So I explained to those kids what autism was. And I told them, this could have happened to you. He didn't ask for this. This is something that happened to him that he did not ask for. He didn't ask to be a child that doesn't want to play with other children. And I told him, I said, this could have happened to you. And as I was talking to, it was like 8, 9 different kids, boys and girls. As I was talking to them, some of the moms came out and they were like, please tell me my son was not, please tell me my child was not. And I pointed to every single one that I knew had said something to my son. And some of the mothers dragged their kids away. Like, I told you about this and about that. You don't be mean. You don't be mean like that to other people. How would you like if somebody, some of the parents were on my side. Some of them took, you know, took the proper action that I thought they should have. Some of them was like, whatever, whatever. We've gotten that a lot. People see my kids, my son having a meltdown. I had this man tell me, he said, give them to me for 30 days. That's all I need is 30 days. And I said, you know what, take them. If you can cure autism in 30 days, take them, take them. And he goes, oh, he has autism? Yes. You can't always assume because a child is acting this way or that way that it's just a misbehaved child. Mm. My son has sensory issues. If it's too loud, he melts down. If it's too bright, he melts down. He has sensory issues. We can't go to Walmart. Oh God, no, we cannot go to Walmart. It's too much. The baskets, the registers, people laughing, people talking, babies crying, people moving the clothes on the shelves, the bright lights, the announcements going over the overhead. He can't do it. He cannot do it. He knows Walmart. We could go to Walmart, park, start walking towards the store. Before we get to the door, he melts down. And I'm like, okay, I've learned to pick my battles. And going to Walmart with my child is not a battle I'd rather do without. Because it's like his adrenaline goes from 0 to 1,000 in 2 seconds. And when he's at 1,000, he's hard to control. It's hard. He's big. He's taller than I am. He's bigger than I am. He's stronger than I am. So why would I pick Walmart when I know he's going to have a meltdown? And it's going to be hard for me to get him under control, to get him back in the car, to get him home. Well, Christmas, probably 5 years ago, I needed toothpaste and I needed deodorant. And I'm like, I am not going to work stinking. I got to go get me some deodorant. You're just going to have to take it. We got to run into Walmart real quick. I'm going to grab some toothpaste, deodorant, and we out of here. It's Christmas time. So, you know, everybody's out shopping. The lines are forever long. We go into Walmart. I did just what I said. I'm going to grab a tube of toothpaste and I'm going to grab a thing of deodorant. We out of here. Every line was open and had at least 10 to 15 people in the line. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, Anthony, just wait. We're going to check out. We're going to get out of here. We're going to get you out of here. We're going home. Just wait, just wait, just wait. I think 3 people checked out and he melted down. And when I tell you, everybody's like stopped in their tracks and turned around and looked at us like they were at the movies. All they was missing was popcorn. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the heck? Nobody offered to help. Even the cashier, I kid you not, the cashier stopped ringing out the customer that was standing before her to look over to see what was going on with my son. Everybody around us had stopped in their tracks and just watched us, watched me try to regain control. So nevertheless, I had to put the deodorant and the toothpaste down on any shelf and I had to walk out, actually dragging my son out of the store. And I said it was my fault because I know he cannot deal with the sensory in Walmart store. It's just way too much, way too much. I ended up having to, thank God Walmart opens at 6 o'clock. Having to go to Walmart 6 o'clock in the morning to get my toothpaste and my deodorant and go back home, get dressed, and then go to work. I'm telling you, I have done it all. I've done it all. But there's a center here in Maryland. It's the Kennedy Krieger Center for Autism. I've been there, Kennedy Krieger. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. They are fantastic. They got Andre. He can do a lot. He's a electronic geek. Any electronic you put before him, he can master it. But he cannot cross the street without assistance. Now he can walk, you know, his feet work fine, but it's like, go to the curb, take look to the right, look to the left, look both ways, make sure there's no traffic coming, and then you proceed. And he repeats what he heard. I'm at the curb, I'm looking both ways, and I'm proceeding. And there's cars coming.
Right.
No. He's 18 years old and he still has not grasped the concept of safely walking across the street.
Generalizing, yeah.
We live two blocks away from the school and the bus picked, well, before this pandemic, the bus picks him up and people are like, but you can see the school out your front door. He cannot safely cross the street. And let me tell you, Kennedy Krieger has been working with him relentlessly to get him to grasp that concept. Also with the incident that happened at school, they're trying to teach him safety, how to keep himself safe, you know, recognizing his body. He recognizes boys from girls, you know, what parts of his body should be touched, should not be touched. They are working, I mean, relentlessly with my child. They tried with Anthony, the other one, and he would do good. And, then he would just fall off. But right now at the group home that he's at, everybody loves him. They absolutely love him. And it seems like he loves the staff that's at this group home as well. He's been doing really, really, really well. But all of a sudden now he's having seizures. So now I have that to my plate to add. I got a phone call. They were like, does he have epilepsy? And I'm like, no. They were like, well, he just had a seizure. Before he was transferred to the group home at the hospital, the psychiatric hospital, I got a call like 8:30 at night. He had had a massive seizure, had lost consciousness, stopped breathing. They had to rush him to the hospital. I'm like, oh my God, it's a pandemic. I can't go in the hospital. I'm standing outside the emergency room doors and they got the security guards and a nurse standing at the door because they got to check your temperature, ask you the questions, you know, the whole nine. And I'm like, my son is at a psychiatric hospital. He was transferred here via ambulance and they told me to come here. And she was like, well, no visitors allowed because of this coronavirus. And I'm like crying, begging and pleading, please let me see my son. They told me he lost consciousness. He stopped breathing. Da, 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 da. So the nurse goes in, she comes back out and she says, you know what? You're in luck. The doctor needs to talk to you because my son is nonverbal. He can't answer any questions. So they let me in, you know, they took my temperature and all that stuff and they let me in. He was sitting there like, why am I here? He had no clue what had happened. He got transferred to the group home and he had another seizure, not as severe as the one that he had that night. But they called in a neurologist to try to figure out why is this child, he turns 18, now he's having seizures, why? And psychiatric hospital has my child on 10 different prescription drugs and like 5 over-the-counter drugs. So my son is taking all these meds and the neurologist seems to think that his seizures are medication induced.
Yeah, I mean, so, that's the obvious, that's what I was thinking.
You know, we gotta give him this. And this goes with that. So we're going to up the dose on this and lower the dose on that. Okay, we're going to take them off that, put them on this. If we put them on this, we got to put them on this and this. So at the end of the day, it ends up being 10 different medications.
That's too much.
Medications.
Yeah.
And then he's taking melatonin to help him sleep, vitamin D because he's not getting any sunlight and his vitamin D level is down. Multivitamin and it's something else. And it's a whole bunch of different stuff that he's taking, but the neurologist is working relentlessly to try to wean him off of these meds. Cause he asked me, why is he on all these drugs? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been asking that for the longest. I personally feel they did not want to deal with my son's outbreaks. So they medicated him. They numbed him with medications.
Yeah.
They sedated him. With medications so that they didn't have to deal with that. And I get it. People were being injured. I get that. I totally get it. And he was a minor and they were trying to prevent people from getting injured, but then they injured my son in the process. That's how I feel.
Hold up. It was getting too real. I had to give you guys a little break. Remind you guys, you're listening to the Goldilocks podcast. That was about half of our interview. We got another half coming right up. I just want to remind you guys to follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. And if you're interested in being a sponsor, you know where to find us on GoldilocksLLC@gmail.com. Now back to the podcast. I mean, it definitely seems that way. And thank you so much for being so open. You've shared so much in the time that you've been introducing your life. It's been so many different directions we can go. And I feel like it's almost like, you know, a very difficult task to try and pick one. But one thing that I know I haven't spoken to a lot of people about thus far, we've done a couple of interviews, definitely more than a couple. And this is the first time I'm hearing about the concept of a group home as something that you've had to actually make the decision about. I know me personally, I had family members who actually worked in group homes, and I always wondered about who these people were and what the deal was with that. And it was always interesting to me. So I'd like to hear more, and I'm sure other people would like to hear more about that process, because I'm sure there's other people who may be, you know, even less able to tolerate or less resources, because Maryland seems to have these great resources. I tell you that much. Like, a lot of you're lucky where you are, because it really depends on where you are as far as the resources.
Exactly.
So go a little bit deeper about that process.
It was hard because, like I said, the pandemic happened in March. My son was in the hospital in December, and I was talking to social workers, talking to the doctors, the psychiatrists, and they were telling me about these different group homes. And he got rejected from a lot of them. It wasn't like, oh, this place, we're going to put him there, and that's it. A lot of places, they had to see his medical record, what his behavior was like, what was going on, what medications that he was on. They had to look at the big picture in order to say, we can accommodate him, we cannot accommodate him. They had to make sure they had the right staff there, someone that could deal with his behaviors, someone that would help with his academics, someone that could help with his ADLs. And a lot of places did not have that. Most of the time, these group homes, these kids can take care of themselves. It's just that the parents can't take care of them in the home. But they can go, they can get their showers, they can brush their teeth, they can go to the bathroom on their own. Most of the times, that's what they're looking for when they're placing these kids in these group homes. They normally don't have staffing to take care of somebody, because my son, he can get in the shower, but he can't lather himself up, you know. He'll just get in there and let water hit him, and then he waits for you to get him out and help dry him off. Like I told you, he wasn't potty trained. These are a lot of things that the group homes look for. And if that is something that the child doesn't have, they reject them. I mean, I have been all over the state of Maryland looking for a place for my child. They have these... like one of the schools that he went to, they have a house attached to the school for children with behavior issues. They go to school, they walk across the sidewalk into this house. And it's not a group home, it's a residential home. They're more prone to take autistic children than a group home. But everybody rejected my son. I mean, we've been rejected by after school programs. We've been rejected by daycare centers. I've gone through so much rejection. Howard County in the state of Maryland is like the best when it comes to special need services.
Howard County.
Maryland goes by the county, mm-hmm. and Howard County, they matter of fact, they rank number one in the county as far as academics. And their special need program is like phenomenal. It is just like off the charts. People move to Howard County to get their children into the school system there. They were able to get me in the direction of finding a social worker. The social worker was able to get me connected with the state to help me find this group home that we had. One, the pandemic again, she did allow me to come and look at the house. To see if this was a place that I wanted to have my son. And when she got his report, medical records from the hospital, she called me and said, oh no, we cannot accommodate him. I thought for sure I mean, I had to went out and bought all this stuff because they tell you you can bring your favorite blanket, bring sheets, bring chairs, whatever, to make them feel like they're at home. I had went out and bought all this stuff and was ready to take it to the house. And she called me and said, we can't take him. I mean, it's finances involved as well.
I'm going to ask that next, like who pays for this?
Yeah. Well, my son gets SSI. And now, yeah, the SSI goes to the group home to help pay for his room and board. He gets Medicaid. He's also covered under my insurance at work. I was paying, you know, my insurance was paying for the diapers, and they applied for food stamps for him so that he could have food there. So very little comes out of my pocket for That's him good. To be in this group home because they have found resources to help house my son in this group home. Because he's nonverbal and he had the behavior issues, everything's being done virtually here in the state of Maryland as far as schooling. They are like, they're doing whatever they can with him one-on-one at the group home because sitting him in front of a computer, it's not gonna work.
Of course not.
It's not gonna work. Yeah.
Of course not.
Kennedy Krieger also gave some resources for us to look into. They had a program, it's called the Neural Behavior Unit, and they rank number 2 in the country. They have a wait list that's like 2 years long. This program that they have is absolutely awesome, absolutely awesome. My son just had this massive meltdown. We were like number 10 on the wait list. And he ended up having the massive meltdown and didn't get to go to the Kennedy Krieger program. But I went and I did the tour. I met everybody. I met the team that would be working with him, the whole nine, but we never made it.
That's unfortunate. That's yeah. Like I was saying, our family has personal experience with Kennedy Krieger. We're in Jersey, but our second son, he has a very rare condition that has epilepsy and all that involved. Mm-hmm. And one of the doctors who discovered the gene for it is actually at Kennedy Krieger. So we've been there a few times. Okay. And we know that they're like really, really good. I think it's associated with Johns Hopkins, if I'm not
mistaken.
Exactly. Yes, which is obviously one of the best medical schools, one of the best schools in the country. So you know, Maryland has always been the place where I dream of going one day. I can't wait for my wife to listen to this so she can give some more credence to going to Maryland, because it's definitely definitely sounds like, from what you're saying, like they got some resources. I know Jersey does too, and you know, both of us are probably lucky as far as our location goes. Yeah. But that really sounds good as far as that's concerned. So you speak about Kennedy Krieger more or less now. Was that more of a recent occurrence, or like what services were you guys getting when they were younger, and how did you fare for your older son to be more on the, or not older, they're twins.
Yeah.
It's almost in my mind like he's the older one because he's more like, you know, verbal or whatever.
Yeah.
So how was he able to pick up more? Like what was the
I don't know. He mimics everything and everybody.
Yeah.
He has this thing with DVDs. He probably has about 500 DVDs right now.
Wow.
I could buy him a DVD, say 10 o'clock in the morning. By 4 o'clock that afternoon, he can tell you everything on that DVD, verbatim, every song, every word. He can do the dances because he has this photographic memory.
Yeah, he's a savant.
When he sees or hears something, he can repeat it back. My best friend, I actually, I'm from New York.
Oh.
Born and raised.
Nice.
When I went through my divorce and the boys were diagnosed with autism, I was like, I need a new surrounding. But I needed to find a place that could accommodate or help my boys with this autism, help me and the boys with this autism. So I did a lot of research, and Jersey came up as a good place to be for autistic children. But Maryland, Howard County, public school system, I mean, they came up really, really high. And I called and I made an appointment. They told me to come on down. I met the superintendent, the supervisors for special needs, the principal of the elementary school my kids would be going to. And I met some teachers. And they sat me down and they went over everything. They were like, we'll help you potty train the boys. We'll do this. We'll do that. These are the services that we can offer your children. And it was speech, physical, occupational, and behavior therapy. And then they had a certain section in the school where they had the children in like kindergarten. And by first grade, they were including my boys, the inclusive program. They were including them in the general population. But they were like, we really don't want to keep them in there all day because they neither one of them was potty trained. In first grade, they were both wearing pull-ups. And by the time first grade ended, Andre was potty trained. I don't know what those teachers did. I don't know how they did it, but he was potty trained. He told me he didn't want to wear pull-ups anymore. But because Anthony wasn't potty trained, he got pulled out of the general population and back to a special need class. But Andre got put into general population and did extremely well. I mean, extremely well. He, like I said, he made the honor roll from eighth grade right on up till he graduated from high school. They had a lot of, his lessons were modified to fit the way his brain worked, way he learned. Most kids, like in high school, when they took those state tests, you have to scribble in the bubble with a number two pencil. Andre's fine motor skills would not let him do that. So they would download the test onto a computer and he could take the mouse and click where other people were scribbling the bubble. He clicked the bubble and he was mastering these tests. He cannot do paper pencil. He had to do computer. So they would come up with all these tactics that would modify his lessons on a level that he could comprehend and master. I thought it was awesome. I would go to the school and sit and learn. I wanted to know how I could teach my kids at home. So I tried to mimic what they did at school and bring it home. And then Andre was like, nope, this is for school. I'm at home. I'm not doing this. This is schoolwork. I'm at home now. And I'm like, but it's homework. You have to do homework at home. He would not do it. He absolutely would not do schoolwork at home. I do stuff at home separate from what I do at school. Yeah. And all the way through high school, he was like that. And we did finally get him to, they got him to where he would do one page homework assignment. One, that was it. That was all he would give home is one schoolwork. But they even tried with Anthony because he's nonverbal. They downloaded this app. Talk Now is what it's called. Mm-hmm. It's an app where he pressed the buttons. It's a pitcher. He would touch the pitcher and the pitcher would talk for him. It would say drink. It would say nap. It would say outside. They had a pitcher. His favorite candy was the Twizzlers. And he would press that and it would say Twizzlers. So I knew he wanted Twizzlers. He pressed the cup. I knew he wanted something to drink. He pressed the toilet. I knew he wanted to go to the bathroom. And it worked for a minute. And then he just stopped. He started throwing it across the room or he'd push it off the table. And then he would grab my hand and take me to whatever it is that he wanted.
Yeah.
They tried pitchers. They had pitchers, you know, that pitcher of a cup. A picture of the Twizzlers. They tried everything with him. It worked in the beginning. It was like, this is something new. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna show you the picture. I want a drink. I want to leave. I want to, you know, go get in the car. And then he would stop using that. We couldn't figure out why he would not use these devices to help him communicate with us. But like I said, he had that one massive meltdown in 2019 and
no,
he's at where he's at now. But the resources that Howard County School System came up for my other son was phenomenal. I even talk about them in my book, how well they did with my son. I mean, remarkable. He was nonverbal in kindergarten and he wasn't potty trained. And now I'd be telling him, okay, that's enough talking. Talks all the time. my best friend is in New York. And she called me one day and I had her on speakerphone. And he goes, Mom, that's Miss Debbie. And she goes, oh my God, he remembers me. I'm like, he has a photographic memory. He forgets nothing. He forgets nothing and nobody. He hears your voice. He knows who you are. He says your name. He never forgets anything. Absolutely nothing. I always tell people, if you don't want something repeated, don't say it around him.
Boy, do I know it. Around him.
Because he will definitely repeat it.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with autism in that. It's something my son does a lot too, with just remembering things, very, very key things that you wouldn't really, or maybe even just nondescript things. Like, you remember that? Like, that's crazy. And then just repeating things and just, I guess it's just kind of how they just process things.
I think so.
So, like, you know, it's amazing. I'm always very excited to hear when an autistic person can communicate, because I always feel like that's the biggest thing that I am afraid of. Mm-hmm. Is because my son is relatively verbal, I would say. He can communicate his needs in a pretty descript way, where even we have a nanny who takes care of our kids, who helps us out. And she can communicate with him, and she don't know nothing about, you know, autism or whatever. Yeah. So he's at that level, but you can't be like, hey, you know, what do you think about the Knicks or something like that? Like, he doesn't have those kinds of social conversational skills yet. So, you know, everyone says like it'll come with time and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm grateful that he can at least do these things.
Right.
You know, I it's things to build on. But I'm always looking like, what was the magic bullet you used to get to that next step? Because I'm speaking with a lot of people with a lot of older kids, and they always say there was a point where they were like nonverbal, and all of a sudden it just like exploded. And it's like, what do I need to do to get that explosion? Because he's like these little firecrackers at this point. I need like the big boom.
Yeah, you know, I think with Andre, I think those DVDs, watching him, because he loved Sesame Street. He loved Dora the Explorer. And, you know, matter of fact, second grade, the teacher came to me and she says, you know your son can speak Spanish? I'm like, yeah, Dora the Explorer.
Wow.
I think he just, like I said, he'll hear what they're saying, what they're singing, and he repeats it. And I think that's how he got his voice, by watching those DVDs, because he'll watch it 50 times. I mean, within the whole day, he'll watch that same DVD over and over and over and over again. And then he got it. He's got it. And he's got the language. He's got the singing. He's got it all. He's got a nice voice, too.
That's awesome.
I mean, when you can go from nonverbal to speaking Spanish and English.
You got something going.
Yes.
That's something going. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yes. So I've got it on both ends. I got one that, you know, I'm like smiling and rejoicing over every milestone that he accomplishes. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. And I got one that's had me in and out of hospitals, you know, not sleeping, blood pressure through the roof and breaking out in hives. I've been both ends. I got it both ways. And I always say, like at work, they call me the go-to person. One of the nurses, she works night shift. She thought maybe her child could be autistic. Her daughter could be autistic. And they was like, go talk to Andrea. She's the expert. Mm-hmm. One, the secretary, they hired a secretary. And she was like, I think my son's autistic. They was like, you got to talk to Andrea. You got to talk to Andrea. And I tell them, I don't mind. I really don't. If I can share what I know and share my experience with you and it helps you, I'm your girl. I will talk you through anything, because I, you know, the doctors told me no medications, no surgeries, but they never told me that there's a possibility that your son could be put into a mental hospital. There's a possibility that your son could be on 10 different prescription drugs. I literally, for the past 18 years, well, I'll say 15, because they were diagnosed at 3, I walked in the unknown every single day. I had no clue what I was going to be facing that next day. When he has his next meltdown, what am I going to be facing? What are we going to have to go through? I had no idea. I had to go trial and error the whole step. I mean, every step of the way, it was trial and error for me. nobody told me it would be like this and it'd be like that. Because I'm like, what the heck is this? You know, nobody told me your son's going to get over medicated and they're going to put him in a coma with the medication. Nobody told me that. I had no clue they were going to inject medication into my son. He's developing an abscess, it bursts, and he's going to be in emergency surgery. I had no clue. I thought speech, occupation, behavior, and maybe some physical therapy, we good to go.
Yeah, and then you snap your fingers in a few months, and then, yes. Oh, normal kid all of a sudden.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
And it's the real conversations like these, though, that I think people need, because, yes, of course, I would hope you're more of the extreme circumstances that the majority of people don't have to deal with all that.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's a perspective that the people who need, because the biggest thing, and I talk to a lot of people about this, when you're a parent or when you're going through any type of milestone, you have an expectation. Mm-hmm. It's just normal for humans. It's right. The only reason why we can determine what is success and what's failure, or what makes me happy, what's sad. It's the expectations in the middle. If it's above it, it's happy. If it's below it, it's sad. Mm-hmm. It's simple.
Yeah.
So when you have a child, you have an expectation. You can say, oh, I don't care if they 10 fingers, 10 toes and whatever. Like, sure. Yes. I bet that's all you care about. No, it's not. Because when you say 10 fingers, 10 toes, and like, oh, no, but you got autism, but you got your 10 fingers, 10 toes. You still good now? No, you're not. So there's that perspective. So I think that when people understand in circumstances like ours, where you have kids who are not neurotypical, mm-hmm, those small, seemingly simple wins are huge wins.
Absolutely huge.
You have to be able to look at that like that so that you can, mm-hmm, have that energy every day to keep pushing.
There you go.
It's like, poppycock, potty training. My nephew was potty trained at 1.5. Who cares? Then you're going to have a hard time with autism. You're going to have a hard time with these special needs kids.
Yes.
And especially when you're one of us, you're going to have even more of a harder time, because we're always have to overachieve to get the bare minimum.
Exactly.
When you need help with everything now, or when you know your kid needs help with everything now, and you got to keep swallowing that pride because you got to keep asking for that help.
Yes.
That's a tough barrier.
Yes. Yes, it is. It really is. It really is. But everybody tells me I've conquered it. I'm like, yay me.
Hey, you got to put your feet up, right?
That's it.
You still got a lot of life left, God willing. So
that's huge.
No, it is
huge. I'm like, I don't know when the last time I've had a hot cup of tea. I've had a cup of tea, but it wasn't hot.
Yeah. I had to cool off while you were crisis one and crisis two over there. You got back to it. It was a cold cup of tea. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know what that's like. So I wanted to ask, as we're nearing the end here, one of the things that, you know, I really thought was interesting when you introduced yourself to me was having twins. So you seeing them, you growing them up at a very young age and seeing the difference between them. You know, you did mention that you thought that the prematurity had something to do with it. Now that you're 15, 18 years into it and you reflect, what would you say had the biggest contribution with all of your knowledge with autism when it comes to why things turned out the way they did? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I've been told no, but I still stand firm. I believe it's vaccinations.
Speak on it.
Vaccinations. Mm. Anthony, my son that's having all these issues, at 19 months old, he was talking.
Wow.
He got that MMR vaccination and he stopped talking. You know, they said they don't make eye contact. And I went back and I looked at all their pictures, because I took a lot of pictures. Mm-hmm. At 1 year old, 13 months, 15 months, they were looking dead into the camera, smiling, big smile, the two teeth at the bottom, showing them these big smiles. And I was in New York. I was still married to their dad, and he would drop them off at the daycare and I picked them up, because we work for the same company. My ex-husband and I, we work for the same company, but we work different times.
Right.
And I went to pick them up from the daycare, from the babysitter, and there was other kids there. And, you know, the babysitter and I, and my ex-mother-in-law, we were talking, laughing and talking, and there was this kickball, probably about, real small kickball. And one of the other kids was walking behind it, trying to get this kickball, and Anthony walks over to him and snatching and said, "Give me that ball." And we were like, he is such, because they were premature, so they were little. And he ain't but an inch high trying to bully somebody. And that was the last time I heard him talk. And a couple of weeks after that, they went and got their MMR vaccinations. And I have not heard my child speak since. Mm. So I stand strong that it was those vaccinations. And I looked it up, and they were saying that MMRs, a lot of vaccinations, not just the MMRs, have a lot of mercury in them. Mm-hmm. And the mercury is something that helps preserves mm-hmm. Those drugs, so that the doctors can buy it in bulk and put it on their shelves and let it sit, and it won't go bad. Mm-hmm. Everybody's system is different. Some people can take mercury, some people can't. Mm-hmm. And that mercury attacks your neurological system. And autism attacks your neurological system. Your brain is all neural. It's all neural. When they were diagnosed, the doctor told me that it was something with the brain. I just started putting little bitty pieces of the puzzle together. Mercury attacks the nervous system. The brain is the nervous system. The doctor told me that it was something with their brain. But then they say, "Oh, no, it's not vaccinations. It's not vaccinations." I say, yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's what they put in these. It's not the MMR medication itself. It's what they put in those medications that causes the damage to the nervous system that causes autism. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And you have the unique perspective as a nurse saying this. So that adds some credence to what you're saying. I mean, hey, you're in the medical field. So this is like really interesting to hear you say that. So, I mean, what would be, I would say, if you had someone who was like me, for example, mm-hmm. oldest son was autistic, has a second son who is 3 months old. What advice would you give to that family member who has that now second child and is wondering, I don't know what the hell happened with my first. They're 4 years old now, they're doing okay, but they're obviously not at the four-year-old level that they should be. And I am wondering whether a vaccination helped promote that circumstance. What would you give, what advice would you give to that?
See, it affects everybody differently. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll use like the flu shot, the flu vaccination. Some people get it and get sick. Some people get it and don't get sick. Yeah. It's just the luck of the draw, I guess I could say that. I just say interventions. I just say just do what you can to help your child, because I can't say don't give them, let them get the vaccinations, or do give them the vaccinations. It has to be your decision, because everybody's body is different. Your body may have antibodies that mine don't. Your immune system may be stronger than mine. Your older son's immune system may be stronger than your younger son, or vice versa. I don't know. I mean, if I had it to do all over again, I would still give my boys the MMR vaccination. Mm. I just, you know, their systems weren't strong enough. I have two older boys, and they're fine. They got the MMR vaccinations. They're fine. It's just how your body receives it.
Would you say, and this is something that my wife and I discuss all the time, would you say the age at which they're given the vaccine mm-hmm. has an effect?
Yes.
That's the thing that I am the most like demanding more information on, like what mm-hmm. evidence says this is the age where it's necessary, when the brain is barely developed, where they haven't achieved and established a place to fall back on yet. Mm-hmm. So that if there is something that happens, they've already been talking or walking and whatever for a year mm-hmm. or two.
Right.
You have enough evidence to say there wasn't an issue prior to this.
Right.
You can't say, oh, well, they were only 1.5 or 2. We don't know what they would have been at 3 or 4.
Exactly. Well, they say they've done research to say that it is safe to give it at 18, 19 months of age. Everything is still immature. I work in the newborn nursery. I get them right out of labor and delivery, brand new babies, a couple of hours old. And I'm like, we don't give them medications. We don't give them, because their systems cannot handle, their immune systems are so immature, they can't handle it. They cannot handle, only thing we do give them is a shot of vitamin K, which is an anticoagulant to help their blood clot, especially boys, because they get circumcised, and if they get cut, they may bleed. So we do give them the coagulant to help them clot, so that if they do get cut, they don't bleed, you know, bleed out. Yeah. And then we give them antibiotics to put in their eyes to protect them from anything that they ran into as they were coming out. But we don't do anything else. We don't give them, you know, mom's like, can I get Tylenol when their boys are circumcised? We can't give them that because their immune system, their body, their nervous system is not strong enough to handle that. They're brand new. And I don't think at 18 months, at 24 months, a child is, their bodies are mature enough to handle these drugs that these doctors are injecting into their system. I think they should wait till they're 5. I really do. Give them a chance to develop. I really do. But they said they've done extensive research and said that it's safe to give at 18, 19 months old.
Safe to me, such a relative term. Like, it's also probably in some places like safe to drive with your feet. Does that make it a good idea? Yeah, like,
exactly. No.
So, I mean, you know, it's a conversation. I feel like once you start having, it's almost the same thing. Like wearing a mask all of a sudden is like a political thing, or like the second you say, hey, you know, I don't like masks or whatever. Like, whoa, like stop the presses. We all gotta. Right. I think it's the same thing when you're like, I'm not sure about vaccines, at least giving them all at this small infant level.
Right.
I'm sure you're a generation ahead of me. You remember when everyone had like chicken pox and you threw them in a room and then they were all good.
Yeah.
I don't even know if chicken pox is a thing anymore. Like, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing?
Haven't heard of it in a long time.
Haven't heard of it in a while, right? Yeah. There's probably vaccine for it. I'm guessing, was that necessary? I don't know. Did that affect things? There's way more than there were before.
Right.
I'm not sure if it makes us any safer, but what we have seen is that the rate of autism is skyrocketing.
Amazing. Yes.
Like flying up.
Yes,
New Jersey, it's 1 in 40. That's crazy. I mean, and if it was like cancer or something that was 1 in 40, everyone would be like, whoa, we got to figure out what's causing this.
Right.
And I do think that autism in general is becoming more and more in vogue. You see it in like TV shows and things now, and people are more aware of it. And then it's even like this Netflix show. I don't know if you saw it, where they're like, it's like a dating show with like a Love on the Spectrum or something.
What?
Look into it. It's me and my wife are watching it, just like, oh man, is this what we have to look forward to? This is crazy.
Wow.
But it is. Wow. And I watch another show called Atypical, that's also on Netflix.
Yeah, I watched that one too. Yeah,
I love that show.
Yeah, me too.
And then there's The Good Doctor as well.
Good Doctor, yeah.
These are all recent shows, like the last 3 or 4 years. So it's definitely becoming more in the zeitgeist of the of the culture nowadays.
And I say kudos to Holly Robinson Peete. She was the first person, African American, that was open to sharing her story.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, when my boys were diagnosed, I was in Walmart and I was in line. I grabbed the People magazine. I saw her picture on the front page and it says Holly Robinson Peete opens up. And I'm like, open up about what? So the line was really long. Everybody's baskets was running over with stuff. So while I'm in line, I opened this magazine and started reading it, that she acknowledged that her son was autistic, has autism, one of her twins. And I was like, oh my God, I actually bought the magazine. I still have it. I still have it to this day. And I remember thinking, oh my God, if I could just talk to her, I don't have to see her, call me. I wanted to, like I said, I had no clue what autism was. I just wanted to pick her brain and ask her, what is she doing for her son to help him with autism? Because I didn't know which way to go, left, right, do I just stand still? Is help on just fall on us? I needed somebody to help me. I mean, I went to a lot of doctors, like I said, a nutritionist, speech therapists, occupational therapists. I talked to a lot of people, but nobody was giving me the answers that I felt I needed to help my boys. And I was like, oh my God, if I could just talk to her. I never did. And then she was on Oprah one time before Oprah stopped going doing her show. And it was saying, if you wanted to be on this show, I looked it up, I Googled it, and I put in a request to be a guest on the same show as Holly Robinson Pete. And the producers responded. I was like, oh my God, they want me. And they told me they had gotten 10,000 requests. And they had my name, and if I got picked, they would be in contact. And they did contact me and said, unfortunately, I wasn't one that was picked. I was like, dang, I just wanted to, anybody, because everybody else that was on that panel with Holly Robinson Pete were Caucasian. And I just wanted to talk to another African-American mom.
Yeah.
And you know, just, I mean, drain her brain, you know, tell me, help me, tell me what you do, tell me how you do. I thought that would have been a excellent platform to be on, to talk to her, to get some information, to get some resources thrown at me. But I think Maryland State did pretty good with me and my boys. I really think they did a really good job with us, giving me resources, the education that they gave my son. I think they did an excellent job. Excellent.
It sure does sound like that. Full disclosure, I have reached out to Holly Robinson Pete to try and be on the Goldilocks podcast. I didn't get a response yet. If you're listening, Miss Pete or Mrs. Pete, I'm not sure how to address you. You're still invited. I actually reached out to Tony Braxton as well, who was also
who
shared that information. I thought that was really good too. So I do think that their voices.
Yes.
In a candid way would mean a lot to people like us, because they have had this, they're more like glorified interviews and, you know, they're nice and it's good to watch, but I would love to hear the raw story and maybe like what kind of resource that kind of fame and money can get you that maybe the lay person doesn't even know about.
Yeah.
That they're maybe not even talking about because it's not necessarily privy to what, you know, Joe Public wants to know.
Exactly.
But yeah, so.
And I know I've learned over the last 15 years, African-American people don't want to talk about it.
No, I'm doing this, I know.
I don't know if they're embarrassed or, and I know a lot of people are in denial. I've run across that, but they just don't want to talk about it. So when I saw the article from Holly, I was like, oh my God, somebody is talking about it. You know, an African-American is talking about it. Because Jenny McCarthy, she was
Jenny McCarthy was like super ringleader.
Yes. And I was like, oh my God, somebody that looks like me is actually talking about it. When I wrote my book, I had a PR person that was trying to get me out and get my voice heard, because I wanted to share my story. I want to travel the globe and share my story. But things had gotten a little rough with Anthony. And I told her, I said, I can't do anything right now. I got to take care of my child. So we kind of disconnected ourselves from each other. But she would set me up with book signings. I've been at Barnes and Nobles. I've been all over New York. I've been all over Maryland State. I've been trying to reach out to other states to come and talk. But now the pandemic is here. I'm not going anywhere. But I actually got invited to a African-American moms of autistic children's group. They're doing their meetings via Zoom, and they asked me to come and speak to the group. Of course, all of their kids are like 7, 8, 9 years of age, and because my boys are 18, they wanted me to come and speak.
And this is what Kafila.
Yes.
That's what I was trying to remember her name earlier.
Yes, Kafila Malik.
Yes, Kafila Malik.
And matter of fact, she just sent me an email. They want to meet again. And then there was another group, a group in Syracuse, New York. They wanted me to come on their Zoom meeting and talk to their parents. But Kafila, she's the one that told me about you.
Yes.
She forwarded your information to me. And I was like, I would love to. I don't have a problem sharing. I really don't. I've had parents tell me I didn't know what I was talking about. And I'm like, I consider myself an expert now. I can look and tell that child's autistic. Oh, that child's autistic. Oh, I know that child. He might be mild, but that child is autistic. I have been correct. Everybody that approaches me at work, I tell them, do this, go here, go here. And most of the time it's Kennedy Krieger. And they come back and they were like, you were right, my child. And I haven't even seen their kids. They just tell me what's going on, how their child is acting, what they're doing, what they're not doing. And I'm like, yeah, it sounds like you may need to go have your child checked out. And they come back in tears. And I just open my arms and give them a hug because I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've been there. And I'm talking African-American moms, Caucasian moms, Indian moms, you name it, Filipino moms, you name it. They come to me because I am the go-to person at work. And I'm amazed at how many people are being, you know, thinking that their children are autistic. Like you said, it's on a rise. It is on a rise. Like, my God, why are so many people having autism? This is crazy. It is crazy. And it's mainly males.
There's
some females, because the one girl that just approached me, she has a daughter. She's 3 years old now. I told her it was about a year ago. Her daughter was just turning two. And I'm like, she's not old enough. She's got milestones to accomplish. She was like, I want to go have her taken right now. So I gave her the number to Kennedy Krieger and they hooked her up with someone. And she came back and she said, yep, she's autistic. She's three and she's still nonverbal. Mm-hmm. She's still not talking. So I have no problem sharing my story, talking to people, talking to groups. I have no problem whatsoever because I'm like, boy, this autism thing, it can take you out.
Well, it hasn't taken you out. And I really appreciate that you gave us all this time today. We're gonna get close to wrapping it up.
Yes,
just wanted to ask one last thing as before we finish up. Like, what would be the best advice that you would say in your 18 years to give to a parent who just got the diagnosis yesterday? As to what to do and what to expect for raising autism.
I am big on family. Stick close to your family because I moved from New York to Maryland completely by myself with no support whatsoever. And support groups. Find a good support group because they understand. Mm-hmm. They know and they understand what you're going through. And get your kids into intervention. The earlier, the better. The earlier, the better. Get them into behavior therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy. The sooner, the better. The sooner, the better. Your outcomes will be so much greater if you start earlier. Don't wait. Do it now.
And with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
And it was so nice talking to you. I want to also send some positivity and love to the Goldies that are listening to this excellent and inspiring story. We know what you're feeling. We know what you're going through. We are you. This is the Goldilocks Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you so much for being a part of it.
Thank you.
Yes, 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 yes.